Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, where ordinary heroes tell extraordinary stories during unique and never been heard before conversations with your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Hillary's unique listening and way of asking questions results in conversations that aren't usually talked about, so you can create the life that you really want but are afraid you can't really have. We are demonstrating the greatness in the human spirit and creating a world where we all reclaim our birthright of joy, happiness, purpose, and passion. Now, here's your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And today we have a very special guest with a very important message and a very incredible story. We have Paul Weigel, author of Iron Dad, A Cancer Survivor's Story of Discovery, Strength, Life, and Love Through Fatherhood. So here we go with Paul Weigel.
Hi, Hillary. Good morning. Nice to see you.
It's afternoon here. So yeah, so good. We've had a few more hours in the day already. But yeah, nice to see you too. I finished reading your story and wow. Got to have the tissues for that one, right?
Thank you. Yeah, this story has been a labor of love. My book really summarizes when I went through colorectal cancer 11 years ago and highlights a lot of that experience so that people who have been sick kind of understand what's going on. But just as much, my book is a love story to my daughter because I learned how much having her in my life has made my life so much better and stronger and more than anything I ever possibly could imagine.
Wow. Well, you talk about your childhood and how your parents weren't the most loving. I mean, you had a like,
that's fair,
achieve, but they weren't really big on the love and the hugs. Do you know like why? Did you ever get an insight on that?
You know, that is a great question. I mean, I think, you know, as adults, we spend a lot of time going back to what was the compelling driver for your parents or what has made us who we are. Mm-hmm. Both my parents actually were psychologists and in them being psychologists, it felt a lot like, looking back, it's felt a lot like my sister and I were more patients of theirs versus kids of theirs. So when we would have discussions or we'd be expressing what's going on in our lives, there was a lot more analysis of this is how and why, and this person is falling into this DSM category 4 or whatever it might be. Yes, that actually did happen. Versus, okay, let me be there and be supportive for you. So yeah, it was a different upbringing, but at the time I didn't know that upbringing was any different than anybody else.
So when did you figure it out? Or when did you realize you might have missed something?
I started realizing that I had missed some. Well, certainly as a younger kid, I didn't, like up until 12 or 13, you don't necessarily have the perspective for other kids of how that is different. I certainly know that around the time I became a teenager, my dad had moved. He had changed his career and changed his focus and had really become much more of a workaholic. He was still in the psychology world, just happened to be in business, and he wasn't around. Mm. And with him not being around, I really remember at 13, 14, 15, really it felt like we didn't have a dad as part of our lives. And you could certainly tell that my mom was struggling with the fact that she was doing as much as she could to be a parent, but didn't necessarily have all those skill sets. So it was as a teenager when I started seeing what other kids were experiencing, other family dynamics, did I really start to understand that there was that big gap in our lives.
And did he ever come back?
your father?
Well, he, it's a complicated answer. he, you know, with any relationship, dad, I was raised in the 70s and 80s. And so I think that actually parents of getting divorced or getting separated wasn't necessarily the most obvious thing to do or say back then. So I think it was much more of a virtual separation. My dad, but there was a long, long time at which I wouldn't know if, I didn't know if my dad was home or not. Did he come back? Once, when I got into my 20s, actually in my late teens, he got diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And so some of his cognitive attributes diminished. So he was around a little bit more. And then it was more as I became an adult that we developed a stronger relationship. So to a certain degree, it came back, but not as a kid.
Okay. So you did have a relationship. Okay, cool. Because I know you had a very, very strong drive to achieve.
That is true.
That's what Weigels do. Did they impart that in you? Did they
Absolutely.
Say that?
So yes.
They said it. It wasn't just okay, I'm going to go with an achiever.
No, that was part of being a Weigel. There was very much, even if my dad wasn't around physically, emotionally, he had a very serious top level drive and expectation. And I think that part of my trying to, part of my long-term success in completing an Ironman triathlon and beating cancer was because in order to try and get attention or recognition from my dad, I needed to be at that super high level. And so that was part of what Weigels do. Weigels attended all the right events. Weigels looked prim and proper as we needed to and were not embarrassing. That you needed to look and feel the part of some type of perfection. Yes.
And is your sister that way too?
Very much so. Yeah. And actually more so than I am. I have had a career really where it certainly changed after I went through my chemotherapy and my daughter was born, but I've always been doing a lot of different things. She really focused in though. She became a OBGYN and has been one of the leading OBGYN doctors in the St. Louis area for about 20 years now. So yes, that she's had even higher goals and she had even higher expectations of herself and has accomplished them more so than I have.
Well, has she done an Ironman?
She has not physically done an Ironman. However, part of understanding relationship and bonding and where we got that, one of the things that has been paramount as we have grown up is our relationship. And that even though we do live 2,000 miles away, we always know we can count on each other. Now, has she physically done 140.6 mile race? No, but she's been to two of them and she found me at different spots and she had candy and she was always looking out for me and knew the challenge ahead of me and what it took. So although she didn't do the race, she was certainly part of the experience.
Right, right. No, my only reason to ask that was because I think you might sell yourself a little short as to your own accomplishments, you know.
You know, I've been told that. I've been told that. I think that humility is a tremendous thing. And my goal has been to get to certain points because they're important to me. Mm-hmm. But when you achieve those, I don't think of myself any better or differently than the accomplishments that other people have, because we all face adversity in different ways. Mm-hmm. We all find a way to accomplish things that are way beyond what we ever imagined. So I think one of the things you and I talked about briefly beforehand was, if you're religious, I've been beyond blessed. Mm-hmm. And if you're not religious, I'm incredibly lucky. And realistically, it's probably a little bit of the two.
Right. Now, let me ask you one question. When you did, in my opinion, achieve a lot.
Thank you.
And I can't remember exactly what they were, but did you get, and you said you were doing it to get the attention. Did you get it from your dad when you did achieve?
There would be I would get attention, but it wasn't necessarily a moment of love. It was you've done what you need to do. I've seen you do it. I did not hear that my dad was proud of me until I desperately asked for that when I was graduating from college. My sister talks about the fact that she remembers getting hugged by my dad once until she was in high school. So we had a very distant, separated relationship. Whether it would be National Honor Society or being part of the choir, or being in musicals or playing baseball or having all these different things to get done, we got recognized for doing what we needed to do and what was part of being a Weigel. You did it. and doing otherwise just wasn't acceptable. So we got recognition, but not necessarily appreciation.
Right. And not the love. So it could have been that you were looking for love and that was the way to get it. Only it didn't work anyway.
Yes. Right? Yes. I think so. I think that's accurate.
You couldn't get love, but you could achieve, but it was a compensation, you know, maybe for.
Yes. Yeah. As I said before, when we started, you don't necessarily know what love is until you see it in other people's worlds.
Right.
And so our experience of love was definitely distant and cold. And honestly, Hillary, one of the things when I think about my life now, where I really, really, really learned about love. Well, first, I learned about love a lot with now my ex-wife, Laurel, that she was with me through some incredibly hard times, even before I got sick with cancer. Mm-hmm. And we got engaged at the top of the Empire State Building. We had done some incredible experiences. But it was when our daughter Natalie was born that I really, at that point, finally understood what love was. And the very first night she was born, her mom had gone to sleep and Natalie would not fall asleep yet. And I ended up walking, I think for 8 hours, maybe 10 hours throughout the maternity ward with her in my arm. My finger had become a personal binky. And that's where I had totally fallen in love for the first time.
Mm. Isn't that interesting, right? That even though you didn't necessarily have it, you certainly got to experience it, you know, like organically, naturally, right?
Right. And that's, I think that it's nature or nurture, right? I think.
Yeah.
Right. And so the nurture part of it, it wasn't necessarily shown to me. Growing up, and we've talked some about my parents and that upbringing, I did have, from a relationship standpoint, I did have a friend of mine, my college sweetheart. She actually overdosed and accidentally overdosed and died our senior year of college. So there was a big emotional reserve for me about being willing to be vulnerable. So, and when you add that in with some of that history, certainly made it hard. But it was amazing how little 5 pounds of energy can break through all of that so quickly. And those pieces that are deep down really found a way to come out.
That's amazing, right? Because you could have been just like your dad, because that's what you saw growing up, right?
Right. And I honestly, what I did know, Hillary, was I did not want to be like that. Mm. I did know that realistically, before my daughter was born, if you would have asked me how I felt every day, you know, when you get on a call or you have something, you say, how are you? And your natural response is, we're supposed to say, I'm fine. And we just move on. And it's just, it's.
And no one cares, really.
And nobody cares. And I remember saying that forever and ever. But honestly, every day I just hurt. And it was an overwhelming pain that I just wanted to scream and get out. But I was being smothered by blankets and didn't know how to get out, not physically, but metaphorically. And just learn to be able to get out from under that. I knew at some point I desperately wanted it, but I just didn't necessarily know how.
And what was the pain?
Well, it was an emotional, there was emotional and physical pain on a bunch of different fronts. As mentioned, there was a lot of absence and distance from my family growing up. And so, so that was there. There was a series of physical pain for me and family. When my sister was a teenager, she broke her back. I mentioned my dad's multiple sclerosis. I also had, as a teenager, knee surgeries. And so there always seemed to be a lot of things going on that really made it, that made life overwhelming. And with this high expectation, I mean, we talk about we are being a Weigel after all. Mm-hmm. By being a Weigel, it meant that you had an incredibly high barrier to achieve just to be considered acceptable. And that trying to live up to unrealistic expectations is pretty overwhelming.
Mm. And there was something in the book about, I think you were sick and he made you go to baseball practice.
Oh, it was a baseball game. Yes. Yeah. When I was 12 or 13, part of being a Weigel was we have commitments and we don't give up on our commitments. When I was 12 years old, our baseball team, we were living in Littleton, Colorado. It was about 95 degrees and I had the flu. And in having the flu, definitely should not have been out of bed, definitely should have been home trying to recover. But our baseball team was short on players. People were already on vacation doing different things, but we had a commitment to be there regardless. And so I went to this game. It turned out that our two starting catchers were not around to play that day. And so I then became the catcher. So now it's 90 some odd degrees. I've got the flu and I'm in catcher's equipment. It was pretty overwhelming. And then I was in such not a good spot. I got in the wrong place and my coach on a backswing, as he was swinging his baseball bat, hit me in the nose and broke my nose.
Ugh.
So part of being a Weigel meant that you just continued to live up to these expectations. So I played catcher in the game because of being a Weigel with the flu and a broken nose, and we lost terribly. So, but that was part of the expectations of growing up. Yes.
Wow. That's amazing. So, okay. Woo. Okay. So you grew up, you went to college, right?
Yep.
You escaped. And what did you study?
So my undergraduate was political science. But I think that tied into originally my career. Dad envisioned me having this wonderful career of being a lawyer who also had business insight. So originally my plan was to get a law degree and my MBA. But once I got into grad school and I finished my MBA, I was done with school for a while. And so I walked out of school with a master's in business and started into my career. There was some psychology involved in my career. I was an HR, a human resources business partner, so I worked with employees. I really understood a lot about psychology of business with my day-to-day work.
Okay, and your father didn't give you crap for not going to law school? Or you didn't care at that point?
That's a good question. I think life had, as he got older, Dad softened a little bit. His MS was originally manageable, but when I got into more my 20s and then early 30s, his overall ability had declined. So he might not, I don't think he had as high of expectations. They were still kind of instilled with us, but no, I think he had backed off a little bit of needing me to be that next level. But I certainly remember thinking to myself, I've only got an MBA and I'm the only person in my family without a doctorate. I certainly remember those times.
Oh my God. That's crazy.
It's a lot.
I get it, but it's crazy. Yeah, no, I know. It was never enough. All A's and one B. Why'd you get the B? It's like you could never
Yeah,
feel
when
like it was
you get
ever good enough. Yeah, I get that.
yes.
I'm
And
relating to it. That's why I'm smiling.
it's a hard position to be. And that ties into the hurt and the just kind of feeling overwhelmed of if you never can quite live up to expectations, even though you're surpassing everybody else's expectations. And looking now ahead, we mentioned a little bit of being an Ironman triathlete. It seems that I started by running 5Ks and then doing half marathons and getting bigger. But each one, the moment I got to it, I thought, okay, that's nice, but what's next? What's bigger? What do I have to next achieve to get recognized?
So how did you had this knee pain and all these knee surgeries. I mean, when I had one knee surgery, torn meniscus, and they were like, you're never going to run again. And I'd done a mini triathlon, and I thought I would do it another one because my bike had broke and I wanted to get a better time, but that wasn't meant to be because that's what he said. So when you said you had four knee surgeries and you still did Ironman, how did your knee, how could you do that?
Because that's what being a Weigel is all about.
I mean, did it hurt?
Seriously.
Did it
Oh,
always hurt?
My knees felt better after having surgery. And what happened to me as I started exercising more was I found a bunch of my identity, not necessarily in terms of it was nice to be recognized as an athlete and do these things. Did it hurt sometimes? Sure. I actually ended up needing to have hip surgery. And so I was beating the hell out of my body. My body hurt, but I finally felt like I was figuring out who I was a little bit. I was getting some accomplishments that I could look at and say, this is pretty neat. So yeah, there was pain, but then there was a lot of joy there too.
Wow. So I know you had said four knee surgeries and two hip replacements and still did an Ironman. Or many Ironmen.
Well, four knee surgery. My daughter, I've got a t-shirt and it says, what does my daughter call someone with four knee surgeries, two hip replacements, and beat cancer? And then on the other side it says daddy.
Oh.
Because one of the things that has been super critical to me throughout her life, and especially as she's gotten older, is I've tried to show her what it means to be committed, to things and have great achievements, but I haven't expected that of her. Mm-hmm. But it is really cool to see her eyes as I've finished some of these events, and the pride I see from her every day.
Hmm. Then you also put in the book that she was running her own races.
She is. Yeah. We have, it has been a delight raising Natalie, and we have been so close. She and I have been so close, for now the 14 years. But her mom and I actually separated and divorced a little when she was about four. And her mom asked us to move to Arizona because her mom had met somebody else. And being close to my daughter was super critical. And so we've continued to do that. And that bond she's seen with the races. And yes, that she's done some of them on her own. And recently we were taking part in a race up in Sedona. And we had a plan at the start. We are going to run together. We are going to hold hands. We're going to have a nice picture at the finish line. And then right at the start of the race, the firing pistol went off and she shot out of there like a wildfire. And she ended up winning her age group way ahead of me. So that was super cool. So she's not doing as much of that right now, but she does have on her wall the different races she's done and the accomplishments she's had.
That's awesome. All right. So we got 5 minutes before the commercial. Do you want to start talking about the cancer yet?
Or is there anything
we missed before that?
Leading up, you know, realistically, you look at my life was really hard growing up, in a lot of different fronts. College continued to be a bear. I worked hard and played hard in the Seattle area for a long time until I got married. And
why
it was
college hard because of the girlfriend.
As Stephanie died, there were other things going on, but certainly, as Stephanie died and her death, it hit me I will never be able to explain how awful her death was. I found her, and so I'll never be able to express that level of agony and pain. But as we move ahead, as life has moved on, got married, Natalie grew. I was starting to get her own identity. She was two, turning three. I was trying to do another Ironman. And yes, that's when I found out I had cancer.
Wow. And the way you found it, I know you had had some symptoms that the doctors ignored.
Right. Yes. And that's one of the things that when I was thinking about what I wanted us to talk about today, it's certainly awesome to talk about that I've written a book called Iron Dad that really tells the story about going through treatment and my daughter. But one of the things that was super important to me today is talking about the experience I had in first learning that I had cancer. What we learned once I got diagnosed, and we finally found that I had cancer when they went in for a colonoscopy and I had a tumor the size of my fist, and almost needed to have emergency surgery. But I had had symptoms probably for 5 years. I had blood in my stool. And so each day I would go to the bathroom, I'd see a little bit of blood. My food digestion changed, and I used to love pizza and pizza no longer like me. And we talked about these different surgeries. I was a regular going into my doctor talking about physical ailments. As we were getting ready for a couple of my surgeries, we also talked about, I had put on the list, blood, fatigue, weight loss. And the doctors looked and said, you know what, you're way too, you're in your late 30s at this point. You probably got a hemorrhoid or something that's super easy to take care of, and never even considered cancer until it was almost too late.
And you'd been telling him for a couple, you're saying you probably had this for 5 years?
Probably, yeah. Yeah, when they look back and colon cancer starts with a polyp inside your colon, and that's why it's super important for people who've either got preconceived or history of colon cancer. It starts super small and then it just continues to grow without treatment. And given the size and how complex my tumor was, and then looking back on my symptoms, yeah, they're thinking that it probably was there when I was 37 or 38, so 5+ years.
So if your doctor had said, wow, that doesn't sound good, let's do a colonoscopy, they could have just got rid of the polyp?
Probably, yeah, possibly. They could have gotten rid of the polyp, or if it was an early grade cancer, it would have been a quick and easy surgery without all the treatment and all the complicating factors that I had for the next year. And yes, if we have those difficult conversations with our doctors and our doctors do heed those warnings, we would not be here today telling this story.
Wow. And did your doctor, did he ever apologize or say, gee, I really missed that one?
We didn't really have an opportunity to have that conversation. I had certainly gone through with him, but when I actually was the one who found a GI doctor. I didn't, my primary was not the one who suggested it. So wow. It was only, I mean, we talked about, I was the guy who played baseball with a fever, right? So in the same way, I had an ailment and I was powering through it. And it was only when things got really, really bad in my body did I choose to go to a specialist to try and get things resolved.
All right, hold that thought. We're going to go to our sponsor, a little word from our sponsor, and we will be right back. And I want to ask you about that. Okay.
Okay.
See you in a minute.
See you in a minute.
Has social-emotional learning become just one more thing on your teacher's plates? Do teachers and students both find it boring and ineffective? Then bring Kikori to your school. Kikori transforms classrooms through experiential SEL activities that help students play, reflect, connect, and grow. Even better, students say it's more fun than recess. Schedule a no-obligation conversation at kikoriapp.com/bringkikori. K-I-K-O-R-I.
Do you ever feel like you can't say what you really want to say? Or that you're stuck or in a holding pattern in your relationships, career, personal life, or finances? Are there things you want in life that you've given up on? Are you resigned that this is as good as it's going to get? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then Hillary Burns, host of the Getting Real with Hillary Show, has the solution you need. Hillary is a published author of 3 books and has a program called the Getting Real Process. This process frees you from what is holding you back, allowing you to create a life you love. Don't believe it? It is hard to believe that it could work, isn't it? The proof is that hundreds of Hillary's clients have used the Getting Real Process and are now free to create whatever they want in relationships, career, finances, enjoying life, or just loving themselves more. So go to realtalkwithhillary.com and order Hillary's book, Real Talk, and set up a conversation.
Okay, thank you as always to our sponsor, KikoriApp.com. If you want to bring, experiential social emotional learning to your schools, to your teams, to your businesses, KikoriApp.com, Kikori, just call it Kikori, can really bring these activities to your people so that they'll be more connected, so that they can experience emotions and connectedness and all the stuff that people might have lost by being on their phones or through COVID. It's quite a miraculous company. So check it out if that appeals to you. And as always, my books, if you haven't read them, I'm just going to grab them here. They're available on Amazon. This one, Second Piece of French Toast, is a memoir. You're not allowed to judge me, but it's a really great, fun story. Then if you're someone who doesn't speak up, we have Real Talk. You can go to realtalkwithhillary.com. Check it out. Again, some more stuff that people don't talk about that you might like, and it might just get you free like it did for me. And then this one, it's called Your Bullshit is Your Blessing. This is about the two sides of life that I discovered. The one side where everything just didn't look so good, and then the other happy side. And it's tools and techniques that I've developed to spend less time on the side that's not fun. So it's called Your Bullshit is Your Blessing. They're all found on Amazon. And now we're ready to bring back our special guest, Paul Weigel, to tell the rest of the story. Hello.
Hello. Good to be back.
So, you know, you were telling your doctor he was ignoring you, and then all of a sudden something happened to make you take some actions. And what was that? Do you mind telling people what that was?
Not at all. You know, I'd already mentioned a little bit that I had had increasing symptoms. It started to become more difficult to go to the bathroom. I actually was on a flight back and forth from Chicago to Seattle. And that's when my tumor got big enough that I actually ended up getting 100% blocked, which means that nothing is going through. And at that point, we almost had to divert the flight. And because the pain in my stomach had swelled up, I think about 3 inches, just as things were working. And then finally something moved or my tumor adjusted and I was able to go to the bathroom and I basically passed out in my seat, and then was able to get home and almost immediately, I think it was 2 days later, I was in, for my colonoscopy and that's when we found everything out.
Wow. Amazing, right? So just to go over the symptoms again, so in case people are having them and their doctor is ignoring them,
right?
Say what they are again?
Absolutely. A lot of the symptoms, I mean, first, we all, whether it's colon cancer or anything, we always should be paying attention to our body. And if something doesn't feel right, we should be saying something because we know our bodies first and foremost. I first mentioned all of a sudden my digestive, how I ate, changed and how my body liked food changed. I used to say I love pizza, but pizza didn't love me anymore. And so that started. And then I mentioned the blood, that I had blood as I went to the bathroom. And then actually, and I know this is a little detailed, but you know, as we're talking about colon cancer, my poop changed. My poop actually got smaller and thinner, and that's because the tumor was shrinking down the space for things to come out. I lost about 15 pounds over a month.
Why was that?
I was anemic, and just the cancer had taken over. I mean, so, and I wasn't really able to eat. And so there were a lot of symptoms, but now looking back, one of the symptoms also was that I had for about the 6 months before my tumor was found, I would have dreams that I was going to the bathroom in my sleep. And in retrospect, right after my surgery was done, they took out the tumor. I could feel the absence of a pain or a sensation that had been in my stomach for forever. And that pain or that association was actually the tumor. So that had, my body was somehow relaying back and forth to my head saying that I was sick.
Wow. And so as a Y goal, that's just the way it is, and you powered through.
Absolutely.
Wow. So what would you recommend to someone else who might have a, well, my one of my questions is, do you get to eat pizza now?
That is a great question. I never have fully recovered on my ability to eat cheese. And that may just be that I'm now in my 50s, who knows? So I now eat my pizza without cheese. And what would I say to people?
Yeah,
I
like
think
let's say
that there
someone's
is a
got even a couple blood and stools or their
right.
poop changes or something like, and their
Well,
doctor is
just
ignoring them. What would you say to them? Because that might
so
happen.
I think it does happen a lot. I think that we in our generation, that there are a lot of people who defer to whatever their doctor says and just whatever it is, okay, I'm fine. I think it is critically important for us to have rough conversations with our doctor every day, and that it is critically important if something is wrong and your doctor is not addressing it, that you need to be talking to other doctors until you get an answer that you're comfortable with. I knew that something wasn't right. I was afraid to learn more because, in part, especially with colon cancer, nobody wants to go there. Nobody wants to have a conversation about poop. Nobody wants to have anybody near our butts. I totally get that. And so that's where I think it's incredibly important to have those rough conversations with your doctor. And if you're not getting answers from your doctor, go to somebody else.
Yeah, I mean, as far as not wanting to talk about poop, but I mean, little kids do, they don't care, right? Everything's poop for
Right.
a while. But
Everything's poop for a while.
I guess if they remember they're a doctor, this is what they do, and we
Right.
shouldn't be embarrassed to talk about our bodies to our doctor theoretically. But would you say, I would say, I mean, I'm not you, but if their doctor's ignoring them, get another doctor.
Absolutely.
Or
And
not. It's like a hairdresser. You don't like what they're doing to your hair? Get a new one. You know, like
right.
me, I sometimes felt loyal. Oh my God, they're going to get mad or upset. But it's my head. It's my body. You know what I mean? Like, why am I
Yes.
sacrificing myself to not get them upset? You know, it's a little crazy.
Right. And on average, doctors have 5 minutes to see you, and you are one of many, many, many patients that they have. And so you may think you've got an ongoing relationship with that doctor, but it's probably not there as strong as you need it to be or want it to be. And that's when, if you're not getting the answers or you're not getting full information, to ask others. I mean, my sister, who's a doctor, says doctors are only practicing medicine. They're learning more and more every day, right? And so one doctor may know one thing, another doctor may know something entirely different.
I like that practicing. I never thought of that. That's good. Tell your sister that's good. Yeah. Wow. Wow.
For sure.
Ooh. Yeah. All right. So what else? I mean, I know. Okay. So let's tell them this. Well, I don't know. Do you want them to have to read the book, or do you want to tell them what you did 6 months after chemo?
Well, we'll give a little preview after it.
I guess they could
Part of
figure
being a
out
Y goal,
the name. Yeah.
yeah, from the
What the name
name,
was.
although and we've talked about the fact that I've done six Ironmen. I did complete an Ironman triathlon 6 months after going through chemotherapy. A lot of that was because I was really afraid I was going to die and that my daughter was not going to know who I was, and or she would have a faint memory of me, and so I wanted her to have a time and a memory of me that was compelling about me not being a quitter at just a heroic level. And so I was able to finish, and then I've been able to continue to celebrate with so many different things with her over the years.
Okay, and an Ironman is how many miles swimming?
It is a 2.4 mile swim.
Okay, how long does that
Then
take?
a for me, it took about an hour and a half.
Okay.
Then there's a 112 mile bike ride, which takes about 6 hours, and then there's a full marathon, which takes about 5 hours. So all in all, for me, it's been between 14 and 17 hours for these different races.
So you start off early in the morning and you just keep going.
Yep, you start at 7 in the morning and midnight is your deadline.
Wow. And how close were you till midnight? Were you
There have
close?
been some times that I've been, one time I was about 10 minutes to midnight, yes. And that's one of the scary things as you're doing an Ironman is it is so long and you don't know what your body might do after 10 hours, or will you get cramps, or will your stomach get upset, or just different things that can be pretty overwhelming. So I've been very lucky to finish,
And
or
did you finish?
blessed. Yes.
Yeah, did you finish every one that you started?
No, there was one I did not finish, because I would have been able to finish it, but I would not have been able to finish it in time. And so I made that as one of the lessons I have learned is that sometimes it's okay to take a step back and not finish if you can't.
Wow. And did you walk the 23 miles.
It's a walk jogging thing. It's more, I call it wogging. So there's a lot of walking to it with some running in between, but I've learned to speed walk pretty well.
Wow. But even like 112 miles on the bike, I mean, it's just a long, long way. Like, what do you do for all those miles? Are you like in the zone listening to music? Like, what do you do?
It really becomes being in the zone. It being doing an Ironman, one of the beautiful things about finishing an Ironman is they call out your name and they say, as you cross the finish line, in my case, Paul Weigel, you are an Ironman. And so there's this huge, compelling part of the entire day of I can get through this for that recognition at the end.
And do you get, and then they call out your name, and then do you get something else? Do you get
You get a
a
more
shirt or a mug?
you get a nice little medal just like everybody else. They've certainly gotten bigger over the years, but for me, just as much, my medals are in a box at the bottom of of my closet. What's more important to me was hearing that, and then I've got certainly a couple pictures of me holding Natalie as I've. After I finished that, are really the celebratory times.
And what do they call women who finish?
Ironman started in the 1970s, and I think they just used the general phrase and say Ironman for everybody versus an
They do.
Iron Woman. And so, but I'm not sure specifically if they've explored changing that out.
Yeah, I was just curious because I know, like, I just interviewed some people and they don't call themselves actresses anymore, they're actors.
Right.
I'm like, okay. You look
And
like
I don't know that you
an
could
actress
say
to
I'm
me,
a,
but okay.
yeah,
Didn't say anything.
right.
Yeah. But anyway, okay. I was just interested. So, all right. So you did that after four knee surgeries, two hip replacements, cancer, going through chemo. And the thing that kept you going was, well, you said you thought you were going to die, right?
Thought I
Have
was going to
something.
die and
Why did you think you were going to die? Was that just a fear, or did they tell you that?
They did not tell me that, but that my tumor was big enough and that they were always monitoring something for a long time. I had it really ended up being 9 years before they fully gave me what I call my cancer-free card, because they were there was a spot in the wrong place. There were different things that they were always having to double check. And so I kept, and then also some people who had the same level of cancer that I did ended up dying. So there was this aspect I was terribly afraid it was going to happen to me too.
And what happened to those spots eventually? Did they go away, or were they just
They
not?
went away, or they were weird reflections during tests. As I mentioned, having double hip replacement, it causes weird, with an MRI, it causes weird shadows, so they couldn't necessarily see everything.
But just, I never heard of anyone who could still run. Well, you didn't have knee replacements. You just had knee
Right.
surgeries.
Just had
But
knee
even with
surgery.
the hips that you were able to run, that's just incredible,
It's part of being a Weigel.
You push through it. So, do you have plans to do more Ironman? More
I
Ironman?
do. Yes, I do. And that is one of the things this year. I actually am doing a half Ironman this weekend up in Victoria, Canada. And then in October, I'm doing a full Ironman. So, it's still part of who I am, and I hope it will be for a long time. I mean, it is a wonderful experience. And now there may be a time that I finally say, you know what, I'm done, but that time isn't yet.
And do you do it because you enjoy them? Like, do you actually enjoy it, or is it for the accomplishment? Like, what is it?
It's the accomplishment. I mean, I enjoy the fact of I enjoy the fact of looking back at the end and saying, wow, I've done something that's amazing and I know it's amazing. And so that aspect I think is pretty important. I think as I've looked at my life and well, you mentioned it at the start, I've done a lot of good things and I should give myself credit. I think doing those races is an opportunity for my to give myself credit for things that I've done.
Wow. It just seems so long.
It is. It's a long day.
I mean,
And the training is long too. Yeah.
yeah. I mean, I suppose I'm looking at it. Could I do? I could. I was a swim. I could probably swim 2.4 miles and bike ride. I mean, unless there's, are
Right.
there big hills? I
It
mean, it's
depends on the
long.
race. It's
Okay.
long. It depends
But
on the
then the
race, or it
marathon
depends on the
part,
race.
my knee, unless I got a new knee, unless I somehow did that. But yeah, it just, I mean, I guess you have to be motivated, right? I mean, you got to be
You
training all
do.
the time and all that. Wow.
Yes.
So you do it for the outcome. But
Mm-hmm.
do you enjoy the training?
I do. I think that there's a wonderful aspect of being into this is one of the things now of being in touch with my body, understanding what's going on, gives me an opportunity to be with people who also are like-minded and are taking care of themselves and trying to live their best lives. That is one of the things I try and do now as much as possible is either check things off my must-do list or have great experiences. And this has helped me do it for sure.
Wow, and you also get to travel, right? Because you go to
And
different.
I also get to travel. Yes.
Yeah, wow. Oh my God. Well, congratulations. And getting that clean bill of health must have been a moment of, did you just like, if you could finally breathe?
Yes, the moment I got it, as I mentioned, it took 9 years for me to finally to no longer be a colon cancer patient. It was actually very matter of fact. It was after COVID. I was so relieved to have be still alive through COVID. I knew some people who got very sick. So then to get through the treat or get through a one more colonoscopy, and the doctor said, "No, you know what? You are just as healthy as any other 53-year-old male." That was a huge burden off my shoulders. Absolutely.
Wow. And I know you and your daughter are going strong, and
We are.
you're loving life, right?
I'm loving life as much as I can. I push the limits every day. I get to, in a few minutes, pick her up from school. She and her friend, today's her last day of 8th grade. And she and her friends are coming over, and we're going to have a little celebration party. So it's all pretty good.
So, are you like the dad's house that they all like to come to?
I've made it that way. Yes, that's part of life. Is that I'm sure we've set, the model I had growing up was not great, so I'm trying to have a much different model now.
Wow, nice, beautiful. So what would you want to
Thank you.
leave people with?
Well,
What's
I think what kind of the message we had talked about before. I hope that people live their best lives possible, but just as much people need to listen to their body and be willing to have courageous conversations with their doctors.
right, so you were saying listen to live their best lives, listen to their body.
Yes. So ultimately, I hope people live their best lives. I hope people listen to their body and have those courageous conversations with their doctors. But I've got this underlying metaphor for me that is, if you believe in the impossible, the incredible can come true. And that is a change from growing up of being a Weigel, that's what you do, to imagining the impossible and having wonderful, amazing things happen. So I hope people get a chance to do that.
Beautiful. And what would you say if you could rephrase being a Weigel?
And there's power in perseverance rather than an expectation of accomplishment. And so that, I mean, we need to, life is not easy. Life is hard and we've got different challenges ahead of us. That's part of what happens. So now, if you believe that you've got the ability to get it done, you can. And I hope that people carry that forward too.
Beautiful. Well, thank you. Thank you for being a spokesperson for colorectal cancer. You know, just thank you for taking your message on the road in order to help other people and for being a champion, an Iron Man, an Iron Dad, and an inspiration to all of us. So thank you, Paul.
Thank you. I really appreciate being with you today, Hillary.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
Thank you for watching this episode. I started Getting Real with Hillary when I discovered that I was a people-pleasing, pleasant phony and wanted to be more of my real self. We can grow together. If you will like the show, subscribe to my channel, and share this episode with your friends and family so that we can have a world that's more real.